The Healthcare Appropriations Subcommittee will come to order. Members, please turn on your microphones when responding to the roll call. Sabrina, please call the roll.
Chair Avila.
Here.
Vice Chair Tribuzzi.
Here.
Representatives Altman. Ranking Member Brown.
Here.
Representatives Duran.
Here.
Garrison.
Here.
Harding.
Here.
Robinson.
Here.
Salzman. Saroy.
Here.
Skidmore.
Here.
Smith.
Here.
Snyder.
Here.
Woodson.
Yeah.
Yarbrough.
Here.
Quorum is present, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Sabrina. Members, a quorum being present, I want to welcome everyone to the Healthcare Appropriations Subcommittee. To the members, as well as to the audience, please make sure that your cell phones and other communication devices are turned off or on silent mode. Members, today we will be discussing the budget recommendation for healthcare for the 2022-2023 fiscal year. In front of you is the budget proposal spreadsheet.
Mm-mm. Nothing in front of us, Mr.
Which will be coming out right now. On cue. There is a brief explanation. There's a brief explanation of each budget item in the column on the far right. The full appropriations bill will be published by the end of the week, and we will go through the usual amendment process. Let me just give everyone some time to have it before them. Everyone has one? Oh, there we go. Representative Skidmore. There we go. I think everyone has one now. So members, I just want to take some time to highlight the many items in the budget proposal. I encourage you to contact me or staff if you have any questions. As members of the legislature, it is our responsibility to make good decisions on the use of the taxpayers' money. And that's what I've tried to do with the budget proposal I am making today. Members, overall, the healthcare budget proposal totals $47.1 billion. There is an increase of 5.5% in total spending and a 13.74% increase in general revenue funds from the 2021-2022 fiscal year. This includes an increase in state FTE of 47 over the prior year. Members, over the past several weeks, we have focused our attention on the issues that impact not just our subcommittee purview, but the economic health of Florida and the workforce shortage issues that currently face our state. Specifically, we have heard from hospitals, nursing homes, healthcare providers, and agencies themselves about the professional healthcare shortages that impact the day-to-day direct care of Florida's most vulnerable residents. We have heard the call of the healthcare industry to partner with them to find solutions to this problem. And members, as a result of a new and innovative programs such as the DPP and IME programs, hospitals have been able to see net increases of over $1.5 billion in reimbursements this year. This, combined with the federal resources of over $2.9 billion in CARES Act relief funds, additional state resources for PPE, medical staffing, and medical equipment, and record-breaking margins and profits experienced within the hospital industry, as presented by the state's Medicaid director before our committee, has put the hospital industry in a unique position to combine resources with the state to solve a problem that will uniquely benefit those same hospitals and the people they serve. As a result, the budget recommendation proposes a hospital inpatient outpatient reduction of $100 million in general revenue funds to be used by the Higher Education Appropriations Subcommittee to support increased nurse faculty, increased additional capacity, improvement of nursing pass rates, and increased recruitment and retention of professional healthcare workers. Again, we applaud the healthcare industry leaders, particularly the Florida Hospital Association, in leading the charge and stepping up to be an active partner with the state to address the highest priority issue facing the healthcare industry in this post-pandemic environment. Additionally, the proposed budget fully funds Florida's $36.6 billion Medicaid program to serve an anticipated 5 million Medicaid beneficiaries. Medicaid spending is increased by 6.31% from the current fiscal year. The proposed budget fully funds Florida's $495 million KidCare program to serve approximately 245,388 children. It provides an additional $6.4 million in authority for graduate medical education to bring the entire GME program to over $290 million. It provides $163.9 million for Medicaid provider rate increases to reflect a $13 minimum wage increase. It provides $156.3 million to allow cancer centers to receive supplemental payments utilizing intergovernmental transfers. It provides $29.6 million for an ICF DD Medicaid rate increase. It provides $207 million for iBudget waiver provider rate increases to reflect a $13 an hour minimum wage increase. The proposed budget provides $42 million to enroll approximately 800 individuals deemed to be in crisis to the APD Home and Community Services Medicaid waiver program. It provides $127.5 million in additional funding for the community-based care providers to bring all CBCs up to at least 100% of optimal funding levels based on the Florida Funding for Children model. It provides $120 million to increase community-based behavioral health services as identified by the managing entities in the assessment of behavioral health for year 2021-2022 report. The proposed budget provides $134.4 million in federal grants for substance abuse and mental health initiatives, including the state opioid response grant funding and behavioral health services COVID relief and American Rescue Plan funding. It provides $4.9 million to raise the minimum salaries of the children's legal services to address workload increases and staff turnover. It provides $15.3 million to fund the projected increase in maintenance adoption subsidies to serve an estimated 4,000 adoption finalizations and an increase to adoption benefits to state employees, veterans, and law enforcement personnel. It provides $53.1 million for child welfare legislation that improves fatherhood initiatives, children's initiatives, post-secondary education services, and mentoring grants. It provides $15 million to serve approximately 1,579 additional elders in the Alzheimer's Disease Initiative and Community Care for the Elderly. This funding will allow these elders to stay in community settings and not enter into institutional care. It provides $2 million for the Florida is for Veterans, for the Entrepreneur Training Grant and Workforce Training Grant Program. It provides $40 million to assist the Florida Veterans Nursing Homes Program. It provides $6.9 million for salary and recruitment incentives for direct care staff working at the Florida Veterans Nursing Homes. It provides $10 million for the Healthcare Professional Loan Repayment Program to provide funds for loan reprogram for qualifying medical professionals who practice in underserved locations where there are healthcare shortages. Members, those are just some of the highlights of the proposed healthcare budget. Please feel free to reach out to myself, to staff, if you have any questions. As I've mentioned before, in previous meetings, our staff is here to assist us in any way, shape, or form. Our staff director, as well as myself, as well as the staff, have an open door policy. So please feel free, if you have any questions, any concerns, to come see us. Members, this concludes our subcommittee agenda. Is there any further business before the committee? Seeing none, Representative C. Smith, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. With your indulgence, I'd like to ask questions on the proposed budget.
Representative C. Smith, sure.
Thank you. On page 4, line 54, I'm hoping you can walk us through the investment on the iBudget waiver wait list. I know you mentioned funding the enrollment of 800 additional Floridians with developmental disabilities who are on the wait list and in crisis. My question is, does this investment keep our state current with the number of new individuals who have entered into the in-crisis phase since the last legislative session?
Thank you, Representative, for that question. So, Representative C. Smith, so last session, obviously, we had $96 million. This additional 42 is in addition to that 96. So this is certainly between the 2 years an investment of over $107 million that will go into these services. Ranking Member Brown, you're recognized.
Thank you. Just one of my questions dealing, we'll probably go to the back of line 275. Wanted clarity relating to the medical professionals that will be eligible for the professional loan repayment program. Can you describe to me those or let me know which medical professionals are included to participate or eligible to participate in the repayment program?
Thank you for that question, Ranking Member. So this program is currently in statute. All we're doing is allocating the funds for it. So this is basically for all the healthcare professionals, certainly to serve underserved areas. This is a program that previously had not been, to my knowledge, at least not last year, wasn't it wasn't allocated any funding. This year, we are proposing $10 million for this program.
Okay. So just for clarity, it does include nurses as well. Okay.
That is correct.
Thank you. And can you, another question. For line 10, with the $100 million, I guess, transfer or the reduction there for, I guess, our critical care funding. Have we looked at, did we take into account sort of the current shortage, not shortages that we have, but also just the burden that it has been on our hospitals relating to, you know, the staff, the increase in staff pay, you know, pay rates? You know, we've heard in previous committees where you have our traveling nurses or nurses making up to $100, $150 an hour, which has brought many burdens on our hospitals, especially those within our critical care areas. Have we taken into account that burden with this reduction that we're providing these hospitals, that we're giving these hospitals?
Thank you for that question, Ranking Member. So I'll tell you what we took into consideration were all the financial aspects. Certainly the fact that, you know, hospitals, particularly during COVID, as we've discussed in this committee, by the way, both last session as well as this session earlier in committee weeks, you know, having received essentially $3 billion from the federal government, having received state support for PPE, medical staffing, medical equipment, certainly having now going to receive payments from DPP as well as from IME, which this legislature approved, this committee approved last session, that will account for over $1.5 billion into the healthcare industry. So with regards to the line, these are hospitals that have received and will be receiving, with regards to DPP and IME, will be receiving all of these financial resources. So now this $100 million will be going towards the Higher Education Subcommittee, Appropriation Subcommittee, where certainly I think, you know, we can all agree we're having a massive problem with the nursing shortages as well as just healthcare professionals in general. So this is in an effort to certainly have them look at a way of stimulating, you know, more supply in order to meet that demand. Representative Skidmore, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just want to make sure I understand all this. Still on that same line item 10, so when you are talking about the $1.5 billion overall received from variety of sources, are we netting out the additional expenses that the pandemic cost? And then are we getting at some kind of an actual level in a regular year to, you know, moving into an endemic instead of a pandemic? What I'm trying to get at is understanding that the hospitals did receive additional funds. Those funds were specific to the pandemic. So has that been netted out so that we can have more of a clear picture if there actually was an increase or not?
Thank you for that question, Representative Skidmore. And so to tell you that with regards to DPP and IME, which is, again, new funding that the hospitals will be receiving, it is actually $2.3 billion. The net is $1.5 billion. That they will be receiving in new additional funding, which will be, again, they will be receiving that additional funding aside from what they have received, you know, previously with regards to the $3 billion from the feds for the COVID response. That does not include certainly their, you know, as we've seen in our discussions here in the subcommittee, how their margins have certainly improved. And the second, and having, you know, that translated certainly into the second best year in the past decade in terms of, you know, their revenues. So, again, $100 million going to resolve an issue that they are seeing that affects our residents while they are receiving $2.3 billion as a whole, but, you know, $1.5 billion net, I think is, you know, certainly something that, you know, I think it is something that's necessary in order to address the problem. You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate that. In terms of the $1.5 billion, could you help me understand where it goes, what it's earmarked for? Is it available to be used specifically for certain things in the two different programs that you mentioned? How does that funding actually work?
Thank you, Representative Skidmore. There's to my knowledge, there's no real sort of restriction that they have in terms of where or where they can't put that those funds. Obviously, once it is in their possession, they are obviously able to do what they need to in terms of you know, meeting whatever needs they have with those funds. Further questions? Representative Skidmore, you're recognized.
Thank you. I'm sure you can see the smoke. So I thought that when the hospitals received funding, it was for specific things, like there are different funds. So when you're talking about those additional $1.5 billion, can you just break it down for me a little bit better so I understand where it's coming from and where it's going?
So Medicaid reimbursements are, you know, those have some strings, but with regards to certainly the programs we're discussing, again, that 1.5 net is really sort of up to the individual hospital to determine what, you know, what needs they have, where they want to invest those funds. But again, that is above sort of any sort of, you know, program that has any sort of strings attached to it. Follow up, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Will we be hearing from any of the hospitals today in public testimony, or are we just here to go over this spreadsheet?
I am fairly certain we will hear a lot from them in the next coming week, potentially right immediately after this meeting. Any further questions? Ranking Member Brown.
Can I make a comment instead? Or are we just still doing questions? So I'll just pass it.
We'll do questions, and then if you want, we'll do some comments. Sound good? Representative Duran, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wanted to inquire a little bit on this CBC funding. You had mentioned in here the way that the budget is positioned would be to bring all of those up to at least 100%. And is that additional funds coming in? Is it a redistribution of funds amongst the CBCs? Can you kind of get me to how we're getting them all to 100? At least 100%, excuse me?
So those are all new funds except for those that are operating above 125%.
Follow up?
Recognize.
So any of those who may be operating up above 125%, it may be that their funds, the funds that they, if anything above 125, may be pushed down into that range of 100 to 125?
That is correct, Representative Duran.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Follow-up?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And again, I appreciate your indulgence in kind of helping me flesh this out some. From my understanding, the way that the funding in the past has been, you know, the funding formula, a lot of the factors are related to the overall population of children, the expectation of an influx, and then being able to use those funds to really keep, you know, certain kids out of foster homes or creating programs that help reduce the overall costs. So in the event that a CBC who has funds above that 125% currently right now and has shown success, Are we figuring out how we're going to continue to show success, or are we kind of slapping them on the hand for doing just that?
Thank you, Representative Duran. So the intent is to certainly bring all of our CBCs that that operate and function throughout our entire state, in our communities, to bring them to, you know, at least at 100% of optimal funding. That is the intent. You know, certainly we are encouraging a success all around, but, you know, in order to, we also recognize that in order to do that, you need to have the resources in order to be successful. So bringing all our CVCs to a level where they're all at least over 100%, I think is, you know, the right course of action. Representative Woodson, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you again for your presentation. Prior to the pandemic, Florida consistently ranked 49th or 50th percent in behavioral health funding. Outside of the Medicaid program, how much does this budget provide in mental health and substance abuse funding? Just to walk me through it, please.
Thank you, Representative Woodson, for that. We're just going to the exact line on the budget proposal. So if you go to lines 113 and 114 in the proposed budget, we have, you know, those are federal grants that total upwards of more than $130 million. If you look at 118, this is what the state is putting in terms of recurring GR, which is $120 million. So combined between the federal grants and the state portion, you're looking at roughly over $250 million going to that. You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I really appreciate you showing me the numbers. But there's also a significant increase now in behavioral health in light of what happened. Would that compensate for the increase that we're seeing in mental health and behavioral and substance abuse? Would that compensate for the increase in the number of people that we will be seeing with issues?
Thank you, Representative Woodson, for that. So, I mean, certainly, you know, between this session and, you know, as I just pointed out, over $250 million, certainly our commitment last session with regards to, you know, meeting those mental health, you know, concerns and needs in throughout our state. Certainly we've been, I'd say in the past 2 years, you know, we've been very, very strong and steadfast in our commitment to address mental health throughout our state. Certainly basing it on just looking at, you know, these lines 113, 114, and 118, and that, you know, that figure of over $250 million, you know, in order to address mental health, certainly our commitment is strong and our commitment is firm. So, you know, to your question, we've, you know, we've seen an increase certainly in mental health cases, but this legislature certainly in these 2 years has continued to increase funding in order to meet those needs.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One more question.
You're recognized.
As it relates to seniors, elder affairs, elder care, I know we had a waiting list for seniors who have been waiting for services, and the list kept going and going. Is there any money accounted into the budget in order to reduce the waiting list for senior services?
Yes, ma'am. So I'll direct you to lines 210 and 212 on the proposed budget. So on line 210, you'll see the investment of $9 million that will approximately serve about 900 individuals. And then on line 212, you'll also see an investment of $6 million that will serve approximately 681 individuals.
681.
You're recognized.
thank you very much for addressing that, because this is something that is very important. Even though I would like to see more seniors coming out of the wait list, but at least you have something in there to cover some of them. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Representative Woodson. Members, questions? Questions? Representative C. Smith, you're recognized.
Thank you for recognizing me again, Mr. Chair. I wanted to ask about the increased reimbursements and enhancements, but particularly for nursing home Medicaid funding. I know that on, I think it was line 26, you had a Medicaid provider rate increase to allow and reflect a 13-hour minimum wage. Does that also apply to those nursing homes that are not our veteran nursing homes? And thank you for the investment that we've seen there and that rate increase. But for those that are, do not serve our veterans, is that a rate increase for the staff there?
Thank you, Representative C. Smith, for that. Yes, it does. You know, certainly, and we've heard it from our nursing homes and Veteran Affairs, how competitive it is in order to keep the nursing staff that you have and the healthcare professionals that we have. So certainly, I think this is a good starting point. You know, to make sure that you know we are doing everything that we possibly can to make sure that those nursing homes have those professionals you know there and serving our residents. You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for that. And just a quick follow-up with as it relates to nursing homes using this part of the Medicaid provider rate increase to boost wages, what mechanism do we have in place to ensure that that Medicaid reimbursement increase and rate increase actually is being spent on staff and wage increases as opposed to just whatever else they use the Medicaid revenue for?
Thank you, Representative C. Smith, for that. We will have health proviso to ensure that those dollars are going towards nurse staffing.
Thank you.
Members, questions, questions, questions. I know that we had you know some members that wanted to speak. If you would like to, I mean, let me know. As I mentioned before, members, our staff, as well as myself, we are readily available to assist in terms of answering any questions or any concerns that you may have. Again, I know this is a lot of, certainly a lot of material, you know, to digest. So we will have, you know, certainly a lot of time to do so. So please make sure that if you do have any questions after reviewing everything, you know, please feel free to reach out to our staff director, Brian Clark, or our staff. As I mentioned before, they're readily available. Ranking Member Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I thank you for these budget suggestions. I will definitely take the time to look through them. It's just a lot of information. A lot of shocking information, things that are very important to many of these members on this committee, but definitely to my community. It would be my hope that, you know, with just the years of struggle that many of our hospitals have gone through with the pandemic and even just issues previously to a pandemic, that we would look to kind of reconsider some of the issues. I know you mentioned relating to some of the margins when we sat here and heard from many of our hospitals this year and last year. But what we also saw, not all those margins were equal. And many of our, for instance, our safety net, our trauma centers, even our children's hospitals connected to some of those hospitals that see many of our low-income or uninsured patients. I would hope that we would look to reconsider some of these cuts to see if we can bring some of the stuff back to help. I mean, you know, we are still in a pandemic. We know about the funding that they did receive from the federal government, but we also were made well aware that some of that funding, if it's not spent for particular items, that that money has to be sent back. And so it would be my hope that we would look to make sure we take those things into account in some of the decisions that we are making on this budget. I mean, we have plenty of time, and I look forward to working with you on that. And I appreciate, you know, the time you and I have spent with just hearing my questions and my concern. I really do appreciate it. But thank you.
Thank you, Ranking Member Brown, and point well taken. And certainly, you know, I look forward to having those discussions with you and with other members of this committee. Certainly with the hospitals that I know will be, you know, we will be meeting with as we move forward through this process. As I mentioned before, the intent is to certainly solve a problem that is only going to get worse, and that being the staffing shortages. Now, when you do a cost-benefit analysis, you know, certainly when you look at where the hospitals were, where they are, you know, certainly having a year where they had $6 billion in profit, according to, you know, several presentations that we've had in this committee, when you look at the fact that we approved a DPP and IME, which will equate to, you know, an extra almost $2.4 billion into the industry, obviously net, we're talking about $1.5 billion. When you factor all of those things in, and now I'm not even going into the $3 billion that they receive from the feds, now I'm not even talking about the state support that they receive for PPE, medical staffing, medical equipment, et cetera. When you factor in all of those things, I think that $100 million going to increase the supply in terms of staffing, you know, to meet the demand, I think it's a reasonable trade-off. I would certainly make that any day of the week. I would hope that our partners, the hospitals in this case, you know, would certainly see that what we're trying to do is solve their problem. Because at the end of the day, their problem affects our residents. And, you know, if they are receiving, as I mentioned before, $2.4 billion into the entire, you know, this is across the state, I think $100 million going into increasing the supply chain for our staffing in order to meet the demand that we currently have that they're seeing day to day, I think it's a reasonable trade-off. With that being said, Representative Woodson.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And if I may just take a few seconds of your time to acknowledge Luby Navarro from Memorial Hospital, a hospital in my district, actually, that serves so many low-income families whenever they go to Memorial. So I would like to acknowledge Luby and the work that she's doing with our residents in District 101. Thank you.
We all love Luby.
Oh, okay, good. Are there, I didn't know that, Luby.
Thank you. Are there any questions, any comments? Representative C. Smith, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just want to say that I appreciate your leadership, and I appreciate many of these investments. I know that this is a jumping off point, and I will, you know, certainly take your recommendations as really a first offer to continue these wonderful conversations. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative C. Smith. Members, any further questions, comments? Okay, seeing none, that concludes our subcommittee agenda. Representative Robinson moves that we rise without objection. The meeting is adjourned.